Now, Thanksgiving and other upcoming winter holidays can mean seeing friends and family you may not have seen for a while. Those interactions may come with mixed emotions, especially given divisions we saw play out around the country and around Wisconsin in the recent midterm elections. There's a good chance for people, maybe you included, to feel some anger at some point during the festivities. It may have felt like there was a lot of anger out there in 2022. Our next guest is a Wisconsin psychologist who studies anger and what we do with it, for better or worse. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you get that feeling that we Americans are angrier and angrier over the course of the years lately? Do you see it more in your own life, in your own personal interactions, in person, or maybe online? Have you found ways to take anger and do something positive with it? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Ryan Martin is a professor of psychology and associate dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW Green Bay. He's the author of the book, Why We Get Mad, How to Use Your Anger for Positive Change. Ryan, welcome back to Central Time.
You bet. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I don't know if there's an official anger-o-meter, but you know, there's this feeling that we're getting mad. We're getting angrier in the U.S. Over the years. Do you think there's anything to that?
I do, and I will be the first to admit I wish there was an anger-o-meter. it'd be great if we had that kind of information. But in the absence of that, we've got to do what we can with the data we have. And you know, if we look to things like instances of road rage, which seem to be on the increase, instances of road rage shootings, which seem to be on the increase. If we look at reports from service providers who talk about anger toward them and hostility toward them being on the increase, even if we look at things like school fights, or at least reports of school fights, which at least last year were on the increase, we see lots of evidence that there seems to be a problem right now.
How much of that do you think is pandemic related? There's a lot of frustration and uncertainty and maybe fear. Is that spilling over into some of those manifestations you just listed?
Yeah, I really think it is. I think that's a big piece of it. I think it has both a direct and indirect consequence or impact. I think the direct piece is that there's a lot of frustration over the pandemic specifically, not just back when we were sort of in the thick of it, but still there are people who don't like the way it was handled, who continue to not like the way it was handled. I think that is driving some of the anger people are feeling. But I also think there's a much more, as you mentioned, a more indirect implication here, that it raised stress levels for people. It added to uncertainty. It added to economic difficulties for people. In ways, and all of those things, which are not little things at all of those things, I think, have a tendency to put people on edge in ways that exacerbate their anger when they experience a provocation.
Okay. And then there's politics. And politics has always had the, you know, potential to divide people and make people angry at one another. We're in a pretty polarized, divided time right now where people kind of identify with their political team and against the other political team. Is that a driver, as you see it, of anger lately?
Yeah, I absolutely think it is. And I think it also ends up manifesting itself in lots of ways. I think we see everything you talked about of people identify with a particular party or a particular candidate, and then either when other people say bad things about that candidate, they react. When that candidate struggles, they react. I think all of that is playing itself out. I also think, though, that there's a piece of it that, as you said, we're really increasingly polarized. And part of what that means is that you have almost like a real-time indicator of who in the world feel, or who at least in the state or the country feels the way you do about something. And that can be really isolating to people. And it can be really sort of shocking to people to sort of feel like, wow, the world doesn't care about the same things as me. And that I think makes people feel lonely or surprised, and they've lost trust for the fellow people in their community.
Talking to Ryan Martin, psychology professor at UW Green Bay, author of the book, Why We Get Mad, How to Use Your Anger for Positive Change. We're talking about anger in the United States in the year 2022. More of it. It feels that way often, even if we can't quite measure that. Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you see it in your workplace, in your interactions with others in person or online? Have you found ways in your life to channel your anger, to say, hey, something's bugging me, and do something good with it instead of something bad with it? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ryan, we've talked a lot in the past. A big message you have is that anger doesn't have to be a bad thing. We're going to get to the positive uses in a bit, but we know that there are negative outcomes. You mentioned, you know, a highway shooting. Nothing good about that. Snapping at someone in person or starting an online argument. What are some of the things that may trigger those negative outcomes of anger?
Yeah, I mean, there are a host of negative consequences that come from anger, probably more so than people even realize. I mean, there's physical fights, there's verbal fights, there's online fights, there's physical health problems, damaged relationships, all sorts of things, including one that I think often goes unnoticed. And those are some other negative emotions that can oftentimes stem from anger, meaning I get angry, I do something I regret, and then I feel sad or guilty or scared or anxious or all these other things. And I think a lot of the times those outcomes are, they're triggered by the same sorts of things that the positive outcomes can be, right? There's a provocation, and then we respond to that provocation by interpreting it somehow and then acting on that interpretation. A big piece of it, though, is, so what have we learned, and how did we learn to express our anger when we were growing up? How did we learn to deal with it in those moments? And if we learned potentially maladaptive expression styles, we're going to use those in ways that lead to a lot of these negative outcomes. So if I learn to yell and scream, well, then that's the thing I do when I'm provoked, and then that might lead to some of these potentially negative outcomes, like damaged relationships, or even the sort of guilt and sadness that comes later on.
How about, you know, something that might be a baseline generator of anger for us versus the thing that triggers it? So maybe I'm generally angry about something, and that social media post or the person sort of cutting me off in traffic gets that disproportionate response. How do we start to untangle those in our minds?
Yeah, really great question. That's the piece we haven't talked about so much yet, is that we've got this sort of undercurrent that I would just say our mood state, but defining mood broadly at any given time. So how stressed I am, how tired I am, how hungry I am, how angry I am, you know, and that I'm carrying this around with me. And then those little stressors that we hit, you know, the person who kind of cuts us off or being slowed down by someone, or getting an email that feels a little bit hostile from a coworker, all of those things, you know, they feel like much bigger things than they might actually be, because we're carrying all this weight around with us. And so the little thing quickly becomes a big thing based on our current mood state.
Let's talk about some coping mechanisms for a couple different scenarios. First, if our response to anger is that impulsive reaction, whether it's yelling or violence or something else that we probably know is negative, how do we start to tackle it? How do we train ourselves not to have to do that impulsive thing in the moment?
We use the perfect word there, and it's how do we train ourselves? Because it takes practice, like anything else. You know, we spend a lifetime developing our current expression approaches, and so it takes time to figure out how to undo those, and it takes practice. There's really two things I would suggest kind of right out of the gate. One of those is to actually start to, when you're not angry, in those moments when you're sort of at peace, to take time and reflect on how you want to handle those situations when they come up. If we go in through life saying and telling ourselves that we want to have an identity as someone who is calm, someone who can stay collected in those moments, someone who can control themselves, it is a big piece of the puzzle. It's we're making that decision in advance of the frustrating thing. The next piece, though, is to reflect afterwards. And this is a part that I think can be really hard for people, is after they've had that kind of outburst, after they've done something that they regret, to reflect back on it and to take time to actually sort of pay attention to how you reacted, to talk yourself through how you wish you would have handled it. Really what we're trying to do is figure out, we've got to build or identify and find a way to pause in the moment. And that can be really difficult for people to figure out in the moment. So being able to reflect on it later gives you time to sort of practice it in your mind, practice, okay, so how do I do this? How do I, next time I am encountered by some provocation, how do I stop myself from losing my cool? It's a little bit like athletes watching game tape, right? You know, it's about trying to figure out, okay, so what do I do next time?
Let's take this to the Thanksgiving table. And I think we've had this conversation before holidays before, Ryan. We know me and a cousin, whatever, or sibling or whatever, by and large, we love each other, but we know how to push each other's buttons. We've got some good material to work with, say, coming out of the midterm elections. How do we make sure we don't spiral into something?
Yeah, I think one of the first things I would say is, you know, figure out now. We're a couple days away. Figure out now what your goals are for that, for the holiday. You know, do you want to get through this without an altercation? And if you do, then make that your priority. And I think that's fundamentally different than if your priority is to say, well, I want to score some points, right? You know, that going into it with, okay, I want to get through this. I want to still get along afterwards. So I'm going to make the relationship the priority. It becomes a very different interaction. A couple different ways to handle it, either in the moment or in advance. I mean, depending on the relationship, I think you can actually reach out in advance and say to the person, you know what, I want this to be a fun, relaxing day. I really want to make sure we don't talk about politics or any of those provocations. Can we leave that off the table for this get together and see how that goes? Another possibility is just to kind of figure out, maybe you talk to your partner or you talk to someone else and say, hey, let's have an out if the conversation starts going that way. How can we intentionally, you know, deflect in those moments? Maybe there's a phrase you can say to try and get out of that conversation if it's going a way you don't want it to go.
We're talking about anger, the year in anger, and getting ready for the holidays with Ryan Martin, professor of psychology at UW Green Bay, author of the book Why We Get Mad. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where did you see, hear, or feel anger in 2022? Did you see a lot of it around the midterm elections? Do you dread what I was just talking about, that conflict at Thanksgiving or other holidays? Have you found ways to work around that with a family member or other loved one you disagree with but want to get along with? Call in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about anger in the year 2022. Ryan Martin stays with us, professor of psychology at UW Green Bay, author of the book Why We Get Mad, How to Use Your Anger for Positive Change. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, your observations at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steve is on the line with us now in Stoughton. Steve, hi. Are you there, Steve? Not hearing you, Steve, if you're talking. I got a note about Steve's question, though. Steve wonders if there's any correlation between testosterone and anger. If so, should we be teaching and learning more about it? Ryan, what do we know?
Yeah, this is a big, tough question and probably too much to answer in just a few minutes here. But I can tell you, historically, people have really pointed to links between testosterone and aggression specifically. And finding there being a lot of research connecting these things. When I say aggression, I mean the intent to hurt someone. So a little bit different from anger, but related. What we've seen, though, more recently is that a lot of that research was done using animals and didn't necessarily apply to human beings. So we see that testosterone predicts aggression, but only specific types of aggression, things related to like social hierarchy seeking and things like that. To connect it back to anger a little bit, more recent research has really looked at, and largely through testosterone replacement therapies and things like that, and the invention of that, has looked at the ability or looked more specifically at anger and found that indeed there does seem to be a bit of a link there, being able to see that higher instances of testosterone do predict anger. It's not the only thing that matters, but it's something that does seem to play a role.
Thanks for sending that question along, Steve. We also heard from Austin Lafarge, who couldn't stay on the line, wanted to ask about anger as an expression of other unresolved emotions or anxiety, and getting those under control first can help with anger management.
Yeah, I love the way this person asked this question, because it's very different from how I usually hear it, which is it true that anger is a secondary emotion, which is a very common claim? And I think the answer is that anger can be a secondary emotion, but it isn't always. So does it emerge from other negative feeling states like sadness or anxiety or guilt or jealousy or other sort of unresolved feeling states? It absolutely can, including some things we wouldn't necessarily consider emotions, like just feeling hurt, which can reveal itself in sadness or, frankly, can reveal itself in some anger. I do think it's worth noting, though, is that sometimes when we talk about anger being secondary, and this caller definitely didn't do that, but sometimes when we refer to it as being secondary, I think it ends up minimizing some very real angry feelings that are justified. And we need to acknowledge that anger is something that can be just the primary thing that a person is feeling. And I think that's important.
Talking to Ryan Martin from UW Green Bay, expert there on the psychology of anger. Still time for your calls on the topic at 800-642-1234. Ryan, let's talk about some of the positive, constructive uses of anger. Let's get back to the world of politics now. If someone's unhappy with one of the results from this year's election, and it was a mixed bag, somebody's probably angry about something, or that a particular issue isn't getting the attention they think it deserves in the political world, what are some constructive ways they can channel that feeling of anger?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked, because it's really important for people to know that anger isn't inherently negative. It's frankly one of the ways that your brain alerts you to injustice or goal blocking or having been wronged and things like that. And so it can be a good thing depending on what we do with it. And when it comes to the what we do with it, we've seen countless examples of people channeling their anger into those positive outcomes, whether it is, I mean, frankly, voting out of anger is one of those potentially positive ways to channel your anger. So is protesting. So are letters to the editor. So is donating money to particular candidates. All of those are ways that people can channel their anger into something good and positive. People use it to create art. They use it, They channel it into music and writing, problem solving. There's all sorts of good things. Even good assertive communication can be a way of channeling that anger into something positive. That, of course, I mean, assertive communication might, you know, offend people, but it's different than the kind of aggression that we see oftentimes really harming people.
So assertive communication isn't me yelling at someone. I'm guessing it's me laying out why their actions have made me angry.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And thank you for that clarification. It's a way of sort of voicing your perspective on something in a way that is that might be different from the person you're talking with, but it isn't necessarily violating their rights in any way.
Now, a resource you pointed toward us, and you're quoted here heavily, a new mental health resource website called WonderMind. And I understand you're a fan of this. What do you like about it?
Yeah, I'm really excited about WonderMind. This is a resource that just came up recently. It's Selena Gomez and some others have put together this mental health resource. A big piece of what I like is the simplicity with which it's all organized and how easy it is to find a lot of great resources. So there's the opportunity to, there's a button right on the homepage that says filter by feels and allows you to click on it and then go and look at, okay, I want to learn more about happiness or sadness or envy or anger in this case. And then there's just a handful of articles there related to those specific topics. So it's a really valuable mental health resource that I'm super excited to have been involved in.
Is there anything else apart from this WonderMind resource making you feel optimistic about anger and the way we deal with it as we wrap up this kind of wild couple of years?
Yeah, you know, there are some things. I see it through my experiences on social media. And this is going to sound odd to people, perhaps, but I see a generation younger than me that is really reflective about their feelings, a generation that really does care about their feelings, the feelings of others, that is sort of aware of mental health in all sorts of positive ways. And I think those are things that I feel optimistic for. I think that what I would call emotional literacy does seem to be on the rise, and that's a good thing.
And leave us with a bit of advice, Ryan, a quick tip to not go with that initial negative response when we get angry.
Yeah, it goes back to something I said for kind of how to handle Thanksgiving mm-hmm. dinner. Figure out your goals. Think about what you really want in this situation. Is it to get revenge? Is it to get to work safely? Is it to preserve a relationship? Start there, and that'll help you stay calm in those difficult moments.
Ryan, thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
That's Ryan Martin, professor of psychology and associate dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW Green Bay. We talked with him about anger in 2022, how to recognize and manage anger in ourselves and others, and why, as he said, anger doesn't have to be a negative emotion. It can motivate positive action. You can read more. That website we mentioned is called WonderMind. We'll put up a link at the Central Time website, wpr.org/Central Time. You can see Ryan and many other mental health experts quoted there on anger and a wide variety of other topics.